This is Get Lit With Literature, and this is Monk. This week, a look at East Indians and so-called Western Indians, and the cultural overlaps and misappropriations and stereotype misrepresentations and such like. For many, many years, I've had this kind of a Zen koan as to why in the West and in America, the fascination with East India, as exemplified by yoga studios and Buddha sculptures and people namasteing each other and such like, at the expense or the lack of the native original peoples of this land, Turtle Island, what some call inappropriately American Indians. So now, this isn't to say that everything East Indian is negative or bad. I do stretches, yoga stretches. I've got the Buddha statue on my patio and such like. So that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is this sort of just why there's so much of that, and why, you know, how did America come to adopt that? And some of it has historical background to it, and then some of it, my sort of aha moment with my pseudo Zen koan recently, was that it provides a kind of a comfort fantasy land. And what I mean by that is that there's a lot of, it's like a pleasant zone. It's a very, you have your sculpture, your statue, you do your om, and it's very serene and it's pleasant, and it's pleasant, but I mean it in a kind of nicey-nicey kind of way. But there's something missing. There's something missing, and there's like a deeper something missing. Now, what I consider one of the missing links, which I put in my book, Moving Through the Empty Gate Forest, is a Buddha sculpture. But the thing is, the Buddha has one hand touching downward as he's sitting. He/she is sitting, one hand downward, touching the earth. And that's what I think is the missing link. That's what I mean by the nicey-nice. There's this kind of East Indian pleasantry and this kind of floating around with this sort of adopted culture, but without the rootedness with the earth. So here's what I put in my book. One of the keys to the story of the Shakyamuni Buddha's enlightenment is that he sat down by a tree. Or more accurately, he sat down with a tree, and vowed not to move until he learned of the true nature of reality and his true function or purpose, otherwise known as enlightenment. That he didn't move for 49 days makes this traveler wonder if the story is metaphorically archetypical, as with, to this traveler's knowledge, no known physical proof of a specific being, Jesus. Regardless of the personality cults of both religions, there is guidance and teaching in the essences of the stories. That tree would become known as the Bodhi Awakening Fig Tree. The other significant bit is that the demon Mara tried to seduce him with beautiful women, then attacked him with monsters, then questioned the validity of his enlightenment. Okay, that's fair. Question the validity of his enlightenment. And here's the quote. Then Siddhartha reached out his right hand to touch the earth, and the earth itself spoke. I bear you witness. Mara disappeared. And as the morning star rose in the sky, Siddhartha Gautama realized enlightenment and became a Buddha. That particular touching is referred to as Bhumi, I don't know how to pronounce it, but Bhumi Sparsha Mudra, gesture of touching the earth. Gesture of touching the earth. And there, what a line that is. And the earth itself spoke. So that, to me, is right there the missing link of the Eastern and Western. That the if the adopting of the Eastern and the sort of feel good yoga posturing and the feel good sort of commodified, you know, serene garden as compared to serene one minute, or who knows what emotion next minute, it becomes a kind of a surface level. So that's what I consider the missing link, and where the twains do meet, because there is the earth. That is, you know, that is what consistently stands out as one of the main things of hearing Native and Indigenous people is ever mentioning the earth and listening to the earth. But we're so busy online and on social media and such like, and ironically, I'm going to say it, listening to podcasts, that how much time do we spend listening to the earth? And how many times are you out in alone by nature, and you know, you hear the earth speak, I bear you witness. You can have that experience. I've had that kind of experience in various subtle ways. So that to me is the mix there. And instead, I think people get sort of smitten with what I mean by that sort of surface level is the serene Buddha becomes the archetype. When, if you look at artwork and sculptures, some of the Tibetan artwork, there are fierce-looking Buddhas, there are sexy-looking Buddhas, there are all kinds of different kinds of looking Buddhas. But I think in the West, in America, people have become addicted to the serene Buddha as a way to compensate for the franticness of the society. And then native wise, the stereotype would be the wooden totem guy that's outside of these, what used to be, now I see him once in a while around in towns, the wooden Indian outside the cigar store or the tobacco store. That's kind of the westernized Buddha of the West, or the East. I'm getting confused now with my East and West, but I think you know what I mean. So then I want to backtrack into some of the literal history. This is an essay. This is from an essay I wrote back in 2011 called East and West, More or Less. And I just want to touch on some of the history of how this happened. Now, in the 60s, too, there were many Americans, you know, some of the hippie movement with long hair, they did reach out and go hang out and meet Native people. So it's not an absolute thing. But the predominant culture that has happened in America has been the Eastern coming over here, which I think at some level has positives to it. But I'm putting it in this perspective that a lot of it has been at the neglect of the respect for the actual original peoples here already. So some of the history, in varying phases since predominantly the 1915s, Eastern practices and philosophies has made their way west. Nowadays, it is commonplace to find in cities, suburbs, and rural areas a variety of yoga and meditation centers, Zen and Buddhist centers, acupuncturists, Reiki healers, and the like. Here's a quote. Interest in Asian religions was beginning to stir among young spiritual seekers in the early 60s, and new ashrams began to show up. 1965 was a turning point for Asian religions in the U.S. Changes in immigration laws in that year meant that Asian spiritual teachers could come to the U.S. much more easily than previously. That was a result of the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1965 became law in 1968. Whereas the Native people got freedom, so-called freedom of religion, in 1978, I think it was. So there again is the actual government favoring the foreigners before the original peoples. Some of the early schools of the Eastern was D.T. Suzuki, who's known for Zen Buddhist ways. And then you get into the literati of the Beat Generation, the Allen Ginsberg, Jack Kerouac, Gary Snyder. Suzuki was a big influence on Alan Watts. He's one of my fave conveyors of Eastern thought into the Western, you know, to convey it in English. He's got one of my favorite books is The Way of Zen. He is an overview of Tao, the Tao, Buddhism, and Zen, and related arts. Another influential book, 1970, Shunryu Suzuki, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. Another fave, 1949, Soen Nakagawa, a Zen master and haiku poet, made his first trip to the United States. And he was a notoriously eccentric teacher who, for example, was known to conduct tea ceremonies using instant coffee and styrofoam cups. Now that is the absolute pinnacle of Zen right there. As I wrote in my essay, what might be considered sacrilegious in Western traditions and was even an eyebrow raiser to some traditional Zen folk, Soen's tea ceremonies transcended form, also showing that less rote ritual can make for more spontaneous and real experiences. And also the art of haiku, R.H. Blythe during World War II, and Harold Henderson and Kenneth Yasuda, they helped bring haiku from Japan over to the West. And then musically, Ravi Shankar, 1967 with Yehudi Menuhin, made the album West Meets East. Now, then the Beatles. Donovan and the Beatles had a strong interest in the East, studying with Maharishi Mahesh Yogi and also John McLaughlin. Again, this is the influx of the Eastern to the West. In 1973, McLaughlin collaborated with Carlos Santana, also a disciple of Sri Chinmoy, on an album of devotional songs, Love, Devotion, Surrender, a wonderful album. And on it goes. And perhaps the most well-known and liked figure from the East is His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And as well, in the essay, I look at some of the West that went East, and some of that very detrimental. For example, obesity now in Asian countries, no thanks to McDonald's and Coca-Cola and such like. So the gist of what I'm getting at here is just to asking people to relook at the influences and to be able to take to utilize the good stuff, but to avoid the cultural misappropriation, because that's what happens when a lot of times when people adopt these other cultures, they get a certain level of it or a certain flavor of it, but it's not the deeper way. I mean, I started watching a movie the other night, The Yogis of Tibet, I think it's called, and it started off with a little quote that was something like a yogi is someone who has spent years in solitary time confronting issues and learning to overcome negative or whatever, learning to train his or her mind and body and such like. So the point being that these ways take a deep discipline and ongoing study, and it's not a boutique thing, and it's not a commodified thing underneath it all. So while there are some pleasantries and enjoyment to be had in the literature, in the music, health benefits from the yoga and all, In the bigger perspective, if it is not being respectful to the earth itself and speaking with the earth and listening with the earth, and if it is not being respectful to the original caregivers of this earth, this side of the waters, Turtle Island, then it is veering off into the surface and the cultural appropriation and the kind of extractive method of plucking things from different cultures without giving back. So thank you for listening and be well.